vores møde med musikken er ofte flygtig. En sang, en strofe, en koncert. Baggrunden, mens vi shopper, eller måske hører vi det som tomrumsudfylder, mens vi kører bilen et sted hen. Når vi endelig hører musikeren, så er det ofte dem, der har slået igennem. Så handler det om deres succes, deres næste kontrakt, den næste udgivelse eller skandalerne i deres liv. Men hvad er det egentlig for en slags homo sapiens, denne musik udøver? Hvad er deres tanker? Hvad er deres motivation, når de mange penge, succesen, ikke ligger sådan lige uden for døren? Noget bedre musiksnak tager udgangspunkt i møde med de musikere, som time efter time, år efter år, står i kældre på skoler, i private hjem og i øvelokale foreninger og arbejder med deres musik. Hvad er det, der rører sig i dem? Hvad motiverer dem? Hvad i alverden tænker de dog på, disse musiske homo sapiens?
Ja, det er den 11. og det er en søndag, og det er min Københavner-podcast-dag i dag jo. Jeg har lige lavet en med Tindkækker, og nu er jeg så kørt videre ind til København. Og Tindkækker, det gik hurtigt, det var struktureret, det var flot, det var fantastisk, og vi havde en god snak, og det var hyggeligt og alt det der. Og det var rigtig, rigtig godt, fordi det tog mig nok en halv time at finde en parkeringsplads. Jeg var ved at sige et andet ord før. Men det tog mig nok en halv time at ligge og køre rundt herinde og finde en parkeringsplads. Det, der ikke var gået op for mig, det var faktisk, at stedet, jeg skulle møde dem, jeg sidder med nu, det er lige ved siden af Amager Bio, som jo er et fantastisk spillested. Og har mange fede ting og mange fede navne indimellem. Det må man sige. Hvis jeg nu havde vidst det, så havde jeg nok kigget efter en parkeringsplads først, og så fundet ud af, at det er den, jeg prøver at køre hen til. Men det var jeg så en halv time om at opdage. Det siger mere om mig, end det siger så meget om alt muligt andet. Og lige nu, der sidder jeg på første sal i en bygning, en god gammel bygning, inde i København, og kigger ud på et eller andet kunstværk, de har sat op. Ude på torvet herude foran. Og det er sådan et eller andet, jeg tror det er noget børnekunst, jeg ved det ikke helt, men noget med en masse farver og noget hejs. Og så sidder jeg i nogle lædermøbler, eller imiteret, eller hvad det er. Jeg vil sige det sådan her, de er noget pænere end dem, de har på potten. Det er jeg nødt til at sige. Det er, man kan så sige, der er ikke så meget rock'n'roll over dem, men det er nok fordi, at de er lidt finere på den her over i København, end de er i Jylland. Så i Jylland, der bliver tingene brugt helt og fuldt ud. Men jeg sidder nu med Technicolor, som kommer og spiller på noget bedre om lørdagen kl. 19. Det glæder vi os til. Og den her podcast, den kommer til at foregå på engelsk, fordi at vi har Colin med, og han synes, det er rarest, at vi snakker på engelsk af en eller anden grund, har jeg hørt. Så, let me start asking you. Why are you gonna, or did you want to play it no better?
Yeah, I actually have a friend in Silkeborg who dragged me along. So I've been there before, actually, had a great time there. And so when we were about to start looking for gigs around, I found you guys' email, booking email, and tried it out and saw what happened. That's basically it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just thought you'll follow along, Colin, or what?
Sometimes, yeah, wherever he takes me. But for me, I'm actually really excited to play something that is less cell phone focused, because it's a very rare occasion. I don't think there's necessarily, I think it's just different with cell phones out, but I think that sort of an intimacy with an audience is really interesting to have access to.
Okay, great. Before we get too much into it, let's get an introduction or presentation of you. Would you tell me who you are?
Yeah, my name is Adam. I play guitar in Technicolor. And we have my friend Colin here.
Hello, hello, hello.
American friend.
Yeah, all the way from Seattle, Washington, but I've been here for about 3 years now. Not sitting with us, but sitting with us very much on stage, we have Mr. Jack Rufus Kelly on bass, and we have Mr. Daniel Levin. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. He's over in Sweden. He's over near Malmö.
Ah, yeah. All right. Great. We always start with hearing a tune, some kind of tune that you want to be played from your list.
Yeah.
And you have chosen
Mind Games.
Mm-hmm. Mind Games.
That's our only single so far. That's the one people know. Yeah.
Yeah. If they haven't been on your website, I think there is two there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one I sent you that's called Fascist Nostalgia also, but that's not out yet. It's only you who've heard it so far.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
I'm feeling privileged.
Yeah. Right.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything before we hear Mind Games, or should we just hear it?
I would actually like to, I'd maybe go before, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you hardly ever get a chance to talk about a song before you play it, especially live. But I think for us, at least when we were trying to come together and write the song, we were thinking, I was thinking a lot about, I guess I can mostly just speak for myself, what it's like to sort of reach this point, sometimes in the middle of summer and, you know, everything, you've been on rush and everything's going really well and you've been maybe going out maybe one or two too many parties and you kind of run out of dopamine. You kind of run out of fuel. You're right to a sort of existential crisis, and everything looks really nice around you, but you can feel that there's sort of something that maybe needs filling inside emotionally, and that's a little bit where that song comes from.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
You're gonna find out a lot today.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. All right, let's hear it.
know this life is all we get, but I can't find any comfort in this world.
When I heard the first time, I can understand it's you that's been writing it, Colin, or what?
The lyrics, yeah.
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 Who's been writing the tune?
For Mind Games, I think it was Adam.
I wrote most of it, yeah. But every time we bring a song into the rehearsal space, it's going to sound different no matter what.
Yeah.
We can't help it.
Yeah.
Jack's cool bass line and, yeah, his lyrics, of course, and all of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The reason why I'm asking is because when I heard it the first time, I was thinking Cure, I was thinking Prefab Sprout.
Yeah.
I can see you sitting with a Smith.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And exactly that's music from when I was around your age, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering who did it, because it has so much English influence.
Sure, yeah. No, you're exactly right. I think I was thinking about, I used those kind of bands as an influence when I wrote the song, to be honest, like subconsciously at least.
Mm.
So yeah, nailed it on that one, basically, because that's not how we sound, to be honest. It's more poppy than anything else we have so far.
Mm.
Especially we talked about fascist nostalgia, that's a bit heavier. It's another genre, basically, so... But it was very inspired by those kind of bands, The Cure, The Smiths, and those guys, for sure. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because that was the next thing I would say, that exactly, that fascist nostalgia is, if that's the range, it's quite broad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything in between, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, but it's mainly over in fascist nostalgia.
You know what, that's actually, I don't think we get any heavier songs than that. I think we're kind of like in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, if those are the two ends, and that's actually a pretty good range. Those two songs are kind of the bookends, and everything else I would say is about, if zero is Mind Games and 100 is fashion nostalgia, everything else hangs out at about 70.
Mm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It may be a little, maybe not quite as heavy, but often faster, often a little bit closer to the tempo of Mind Games, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have how many? 3 nations combined?
Yeah,
four?
We got 4.
4, actually. We are all from different places. Jack is sort of from 2.
Yeah.
Jack is English Irish.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when he speaks, presents more as English. The States, UK, Ireland, Sweden, and our one native Dane.
Potato Dane, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Luckily, we gotta have somebody to hold it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that bring into the music? Does it bring anything in?
I think it does, yeah. Especially because we're all rock influenced, but I can definitely tell Jackie has a little bit of more. So he's from England, and there's indie rock music is very popular in England. And I think I can see sometimes also in his songwriting that kind of influence. Or say Colin, who's from Seattle originally, and has lived in New York. I can definitely see that grunge connection.
Yeah, everything somewhere, I read
somehow.
Is indie.
I can definitely tell. Daniel, he's from Malmö, and apparently there's a pretty cool small underground punk scene going on there. Yeah. So I can hear that kind of style in his playing also. I'm not sure about my own influence in that regard, but I can definitely tell in those guys where they came from, how they dragged their own genres into the music we create here.
Yeah, and I feel like I can hear a lot in Adam's guitar playing. I can hear a lot of classic rock for sure. Mm-hmm. It's nice to have somebody who can shred at a moment's notice. I do play some guitar, but I try not to on stage, especially not if I'm not gonna compete with that.
No. But what does it do with the group? Does it do anything else than talking about music? Come with different approaches to it. But how about how you are rehearsing, or how you are coming together, or how you are thinking about music, or anything? Does it do anything there?
I think that it. it means that we get to learn a lot from each other that way, I think. Daniel is, I think, the most seasoned musical veteran of all of us, our drummer from Sweden, and there's also a bit of a difference in the ages with all of us. I think Daniel and I are both a little bit older than Jack and Adam, and things that I grew up with as a teenager, Daniel knows a little bit more, and so we'll sort of go around either in a group chat or actually in rehearsal if something reminds us of something, or if there's like a really cool sound that we've heard before in a song. The odds are that maybe one of the other people in the room has heard it, but it's hardly ever all four of us.
Yeah,
there's plenty of things. If anything, if everybody else, if the rest of the three of them know something, odds are I'm the one who doesn't know it. I'm the one who there's certain things that I know a lot of, and there's a lot of things that I know absolutely nothing about.
Mm. Okay. But have you tried to, or if I'm asking you if there is a cultural difference in how you see music and how you play music compared to the countries?
Mm. I can tell with Jack, because he's actually studied. He's the only one in the band that has studied music, and he has a jazz background.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from him when it comes to ideas. He's always got a really good idea in terms of, say, dynamics. That's one thing I learned a lot about from him. Mm-hmm. All of those kind of things in songwriting. In terms of the cultural thing, I honestly don't feel it that much. At least not like in a culture shock way at all. It's we all like have a great time hanging out together, first of all, playing music also, in spite of us being from different places around the world. So I don't know how you feel about it, but...
I think the music actually really helped. I mean, I don't think there's not any reason why people from four to five nations shouldn't get along. But I think that I found, at least since coming here, that it's been very, very easy for me to meet people here. Mm. And music is 90% of that. Mm. And I think that's, for all of us, that becomes our first language. That's really how we communicate.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think it would have been the same if a Dane were coming to Seattle? Like you...
Yeah. If a Dane was coming to Seattle and the other two to three members of the band were all from Seattle,
yeah,
possibly. I mean, my guess is, I'm a little bit of a weird Seattleite for this, but for normal Seattleites, if you're going to there, the odds are that everyone else in the band is probably going to be smoking weed, which is legal there, and so if you've got to be ready to get a little more stonery and a little bit slow the pace down a little bit. If you're used to things working very efficiently as they tend to here, it's similar weather, but you're gonna have to get used to it. No one's gonna be on time, for example. you'll definitely be the first one at rehearsal every time. Yeah, but I think that it would, you know, everyone. I've lived in a couple different towns, and no matter what, if everyone can speak together musically, no matter where they're from, it always goes just fine. If not, then also you feel that, you know, you feel that really quickly if you're playing with somebody and you can feel if there's a snag musically, even if you get along really well with them personally. Mm-hmm. I think it can go both ways.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Adam?
In terms of if I went to Seattle? Wow, it's a good question. I have been to Seattle.
Oh, in
first of all, but
you
no,
you, it's you a, didn't it's say a, hi. Yeah,
yeah. It's a good question, actually. It also depends on which kind of Dane, I think. I don't know. It's an interesting question. I think I wouldn't know because I haven't tried it before. I think it would be kind of like the same as what we're doing here. I mean, as long as you're also open to other cultures and as long as you figure out the way people work with each other, the difference between countries, how they work together, I don't think it would be that big of a problem, to be honest. I think it would be, I think it would be quite the same for Colin coming over here.
Yeah.
Let me try to take it in a different direction. How did you get into music, Adam?
I've basically always played music since I was nine. Since school, music school, and stuff like that, been in bands. And I actually lived, I moved to the UK. I lived there for 9 months in London, trying, this was during COVID. So I was trying to get a band together over there during that time, which was difficult since everything was closed over there at that time. So when I came home, I was trying to get a band together and met up with these guys on Facebook. But I've always basically been in and out of bands, in Denmark at least.
Did your parents play?
No, not at all. Not at all.
So how did you...
Well, actually, if you want the whole story, I'm one of the Guitar Hero generation kids.
Okay.
Yeah, it started out that way, and I slowly moved towards a real guitar at some point. So yeah, that's basically how it started. So, yeah.
What about you, Colin?
I guess both of my parents do play. I've been very lucky that everyone in my family does play something. And in terms of guitar or rock music, you know, I came to that probably when I was about 14, which is a good time to come to that. There in Seattle, there's a museum. It used to be called EMP. Now it's called MoPop. There's a museum of pop culture. It was originally designed to be a Jimi Hendrix museum, and then they made it into more of a general rock museum.
It's a very cool place.
It's a super cool place.
Yeah.
The architect, they gave the architecture a lot of shit when they first built it. It looks like a bunch of Telecasters stacked on top of each other. But I had some cousins visiting up for the summer, and it was. I think it had just opened. And my dad took my brother and some of our cousins there. And because we were so many, it was actually cheaper for us to get a membership. So my dad bought a membership and used some of the guest passes, and we all went in. And they had all these exhibits, but the main thing that they had that had a big effect on me were these jam rooms. They would have, some of them would be just guitar, some of them would be just for bass, some of them would be drums, some of them would be for a whole band. But they would have a little... mini, whatever the version of an iPad was before an iPad, that would sort of give you a little virtual lesson, and then you could just play around with it for about 5 minutes until the room kicks you out. And so we had this membership for the whole year, and my brother at the time had really bad asthma. We were just discovering this, and we would go downtown near this museum almost every Sunday with my dad for church. And they use a lot of incense. It's an Anglican Episcopal church. It's very high drama, high theater. Lots and lots of incense, lots of smoke. Like, might as well have a fog machine. And so we'd go there, and then my brother would be like, I can't breathe. And so we'd be like, all right, fine, we'll go to rock and roll church. And we'd go over there and we'd play guitars for about a year. And that's what really kicked at least me off going down anything that direction.
Damn.
Yeah. But what is it that... music is bringing to you? What is it giving you?
Wow.
For
it's
me...
It's like water, man. You can't live without water or music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
But what is it that music can?
What music can?
Yeah.
Wow.
For me, I think music keeps me sane. Absolutely. For me, at least, there's all sorts of different kinds of music and different applications for it, but I think for me, at the core of it, whenever things have gotten really dark or really rough, music has definitely saved my life. And that's a little bit of what I try and use it for, back with an audience or back for people, in terms of any sort of goals or anything. Whenever we get on stage or whenever I have an opportunity to play, especially with people, because there's just so much more energy working there, I feel like if you can help somebody out, that makes all the difference. That's just trying to pay it back, you know, because it's done that for me.
Yeah,
I agree 100% with that. And also, if you compare it to other art medium or other art forms, say if you're watching a movie, it kind of takes a while maybe to get into that state of like whatever. Or reading a book, it takes a while to get a sense of... to get a feeling of what's going on. If you're looking at a painting, for example, you can look at it for maybe 10 minutes before you actually feel something, whereas with music, it's pretty much instant. The moment you listen to music in general, you get an instant feeling. I don't know why that is, to be honest, but That's what I like about music. It's if you can get into a certain emotion pretty fast listening to music.
Mm. Mm.
On top of that, that's what I find interesting.
Mm. But why making your own music? Why not just play others?
Hmm. And I think there's nothing wrong with playing other people's music.
No.
I guess it's just a chance to have.
I mean, you have to be creative. You have to sit down. You have to write lyrics. You have to try to find some chords and tune and that kind of shit. Yeah, it's a lot of bother just to play music, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like I heard.
So why?
Yeah.
Why do all that bother? What is it that you?
It's the bittersweet curse, right? I did an education more in theater, actually. Mm-hmm. My whole life I was going much more towards I'm going to do acting, I was going to do theater acting, and that was it. I ended up at sort of a mime school in Paris for a bit, and I tore a ligament in my wrist, and they kicked me out. They said, you know, you can come back when you're not broken, that's fine, but you really need your body for this.
Mm.
So I started to take art history lessons and opera lessons. Which I don't really use with our stuff. But it was enough to kick me down a path and make me realize that on the side, I'd always been doing music. I'd always been working on something, even writing, you know, at first terrible little songs. They've gotten a little bit better. But it's almost like a compulsion, I guess, for me. If any documentaries or anything that I watch, I've started to try and watch other TV shows and things, but if it doesn't really grab me, I'd rather watch a documentary about music or read books about music scenes, like Please Kill Me or any of those ones. But it's about 50% compulsion for me, at least.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think, Adam?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, the difference between creating and perform, just playing other people's songs. I don't know. I mean, I always find it hard to when people say that they don't do anything creative. I always find that really weird that some people just don't do anything if they're in a state of depression, for example, anxiety. They don't really have anything to go to creatively to get that emotion out. For me, that's the same thing as Colin is talking about. Like it's kind of like meditating. For people, I think picking up a guitar for me or a piano or whatever, trying to get the emotion out some way somehow. Mm. That's really what it is. Mm.
What do you? How can I put it? Have you ever thought of what you want to achieve with the music that you're making?
Well, we definitely want to get out there playing for people, releasing stuff. Like the whole way, see how far this thing goes, to be honest. Because it's just fun. It's so much fun for us.
Mm.
It's fun for hopefully other people.
Mm.
That's where I come from.
Mm.
We're not what you talked about earlier as, you know, playing as a hobby. Just meeting with a few guys once a week, having some beers. It's a little bit more serious for us. But bottom line, get out there and play for people. It's just so much fun for us.
Yeah.
The thing about playing for people, let's put the clock forward, something like 20 years or something.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you still will be playing music? And do you think you still want to go out there and play? Concerts.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. It's what we it's all we know.
Why?
It is all we know, it's our nature. Yeah.
You can't help it.
We can't help
kind
it.
Of, no. Yeah, yeah. I think I've tried to stop a couple times. It didn't really work.
It's like an addiction or what?
Absolutely. The live drums and caffeine are my two favorite drugs. Hands down. No question. But I think as long as there's, you know, as long as we're able to get something out of it, and hopefully as long as other people can get something out of it, then, you know, that's it. And just try and ride that as much, you know, try and reach as many people as we can with that.
When you're talking about reach other people, what kind of reach is that?
I think emotional. I think anything. One of the nice things about music is that you can dance around a feeling without necessarily having to draw it out on a technical scheme or name exactly what it is. You're painting an oral picture around what it could be. And it can mean different things to different people, you know. I mean, like anything, it's all up for interpretation. But I think anything, a little bit like I was saying before, anything that'll help somebody through a hard time, anything that will get somebody up in the morning. It makes it sound like everything that we play is really downer. It doesn't sound necessarily that downer. But a lot of what I come from, and I think a lot of the Seattle sound,
is a lot of
grunge, every grunge band's favorite word, really concerns itself with, all right, you're in a difficult situation, but instead of melting and disappearing into this void, what can you get up and what can you fight back and do it? Well, you know, what can you use to push through it, even if it's a bit of a hard time, and get through to the next whatever the next adventure is.
Mm-hmm. I was talking, one of the bands that gonna play at the festival also is they've taken the band name Lovely Depression.
Lovely Depression.
Yeah. Nice. And a young kids, and they want to, they're playing indie. Yeah, which I find a little bit funny because, I mean, for me, indie is something that belonged to the 90s or something.
It's all back now. Yeah. Full circle.
Somehow. Yeah. But anyway, they're playing this indie and they are really going into it. And they're taking the name Lovely Depression. And it is a bit, how can you say, gloomy. And all that. And I asked them, what is it that with the feeling of being gloomy or being down that you like? Mm-hmm. And they had a bit hard time explaining it. Mm-hmm. And like you're talking about grunge, about a bit about the same, yeah? What is it by feelings that are not being happy, not being, whatever, but being sad or being, I wouldn't say depressed, but melancholic or whatever, yeah? Mm-hmm. What is it with that kind of feeling that is good, because nobody talks about that anymore.
I think there's the best language that I've ever heard to sum it up is Portuguese. There's a word I think it's pronounced saudade, which means roughly translates to the pleasure of being sad or of missing something. It's a little bit like hygge, where it doesn't really translate directly. But I think that there's at least, if you allow yourself to feel what we would term as more negative emotions, you're accepting a little bit of what reality is. You know, we're not always up all the time. Not everything is quite as bright and shiny as things are maybe are promised when we're younger, or
Facebook or Instagram.
Yeah, or as anyone who's selling something to you wants you to believe. You know, it doesn't. It's not necessarily good for sales. But I think that there has been a bit of a shift in mainstream culture, especially in the last 3 years. So after the start of the pandemic, a very dark part of me, I want none of it. I really didn't want any of that to happen. But one thing that I did think was, well, you know, this might give some people a little bit of different perspective. Everything was a very sugary pop at the time, I felt. Mm. And it might give a little bit more understanding and a voice to art and to anything that deals with things a little more on the darker side. I think in terms of I think it's a very dangerous correlation to get into that, you know, suffering is good for art, or that suffering produces good art. I think that good art can be sort of a, you know, a pearl inside of an oyster, something that comes from a negative experience that's sort of a bonus. But, you know, no one, I don't think anyone should ever pursue it that way. That's very much the hard way to go. And I think anyone who's gone that way would tell you it's not worth it, mm-hmm. that direction.
No, but it's like, now we're talking about this and I can't help dwelling a bit about it, because it's like society, or in the Danish society anyway, that's what I can talk about. Mm. It's like in the Danish society, if things come down, that you ought to be happy.
Yeah.
Like, and happiness, you also have that, and you have to have that all the time, more or less. And everybody mm-hmm. knows that it can't be. It's a sparkle of a moment where you have the total, complete happiness, yeah?
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And the rest of the time, you're just going around. So the values of being, how can you say it, a person or a human, mm-hmm. Isn't necessarily the happiness. And everybody knows this, but everybody is telling the other story.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about your music, and you're young, and the Lovely Depression was even younger. We're talking about maybe a bit more, as you put it, Colin, before, a bit more of the dark side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a little bit, yeah.
May the force be with you, or whatever.
Exactly.
But a bit more of the dark side. Mm-hmm. And you're also talking about the pandemic, and maybe that was a part of it, that we tried to get into that kind of state.
Mm.
But I don't know if... Do you think people are ready to step up and grasp the whole life, the whole sadness, the whole joy, the whole?
It's a good question. Mm. I think the older you get, the more you appreciate all of your emotions, for sure. Especially when you're young, it's difficult, I feel like. And that's the experience I get with my friends also, you know, as you talked about before, the whole strive for happiness, say, you know, all of those things is kind of difficult, because if that's what you're aiming for all the time, you will burn out at some point, for sure. So through experience, and it will happen for everybody, like the whole burning down, feeling up depression and anxiety and all of that. Hopefully when you get a little bit older and you have more experience, you kind of get to the point of being able to, you know, just embracing all of those feelings. Even the bad can be good also. If you know how to embrace it and you can control your feelings, I mean, that's really that's the aim, right?
Mm.
But it's when it's difficult, when it's hard, if you're going through a depressed state for a while, that's when it's hard. You don't think about that if you're happy. So... Mm. I feel like there's maybe a connection with our music also in that regard. I don't really have a lot to do with the lyrics from Colin's side. I usually do the music, but it's definitely a lot of energy going on also at the same time. It's a weird package of emotions I feel like we give people every once in a while.
It's
everything from Mind Games to fascist nostalgia, which is kind of political.
It gets
everything in between, right?
Yeah, it gets complicated. For a long time, I really felt. I had a hard time because I almost would feel bad because I've worked a little bit in cover bands and things like that. But usually, for the most part, if I audition for one, they're sort of like, that's a pop song. We're not gonna. That's my natural take in it. Like I'm not a very good liar. It doesn't. I'm not convincing anybody that that the sun's gonna come out tomorrow and everything's gonna be perfect all the time. I think in terms of whether or not people are ready to look at things in a sort of a 360 balanced way, balance is relative. I think that it's great if they have a life where they don't have to deal with any more negative emotions, with any sadness, with any depression or anything like that. That's lovely. You know, I don't necessarily think that it is a requirement to go look on that side at all. I think that often that side shows up. I don't think you really get to choose it. Mm. I think some people, you know, everyone's got a different path. It just depends on on what you stumble into.
Why are you playing in a band, which can sound strange that I'm asking about? But I mean, today, nowadays, compared to the Stone Age where I started playing, today you can more or less do it all yourself. Just doing it on a computer.
A lot of people do that also. That's what's fun about rock music for me, or say if you're in a jazz band, like the whole thing of being in a rehearsal room with four or five guys in a room shooting off ideas, I mean, it just keeps it pure, to be honest, and you have real instruments. The human element is a lot more evident compared to if I sat at home with my computer and did the whole thing media-wise. It kind of loses the human element, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's you learn more from playing with other people.
Mm.
I think that it adds overall. I mean, you have a few exceptions, I think, where every once in a while you'll have somebody who knows exactly what they want, and it also really resonates, and it's also really good. I think it's really tough to find. I mean, you know, not everyone's Prince, you know, not everyone can go in and record their entire album and play everything and it sounds like a full band. You do need a little bit of a direction, I think, to have a focused idea, to be able to communicate that to the audience. I think that does help. But, I mean, for me at least, especially live, like I know maybe we're talking a little bit more in a recording context, but even in a recording context, there's so much more energy. You know, you get everyone else's life experience, you get everyone else's favorite little riffs or things like that, everyone else's little musical tricks. And if it's just you, I mean, I've done some solo stuff and I'm bored of it. You know, it's just an echo chamber of you versus yourself. And I think that it's good for self-discovery. But in my experience, in my personal experience, it isn't nearly as interesting as playing with other people or writing with other people.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, we were talking about happiness before and we were talking about sad. Mm-hmm. And I mean, playing together with others, I had a bit of talk with Adam about it. Also, the thing about arranging these podcasts with the dates and to agree on how, where, and when.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually be there at the time it suits others.
Mm-hmm.
You have to accept that people are idiots sometimes, and all that kind of shit. Yeah. And when you're going out to play, you have to find out who's driving, how are we getting there, we're gonna pack, and after we come home, we're gonna put it up at the room again, and all that kind of shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is a lot of bother in playing music.
Yeah, that definitely is. Yeah.
And to be playing together with others makes it even more hard to get around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that music, what is it that the others bring that is so valuable? You're talking about teaching,
mm-hmm.
as a learning stuff from others. Yeah.
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 But I think somehow there must be more to it because you can probably read a book about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, right? I mean, whenever you're, it depends on how many people however many people are in the band, it's like you're dating that many people. You'll have the same sort of little squabbles. The music sort of becomes the core of the relationship, obviously, but you have to get really good at polyamory really quickly. And it's not something that I think the majority of the people get practice with, but it definitely can be tricky. You have to practice a lot of communication, but I think when you finally get out there,
it's all worth it.
The high of the actual music playing is so great that you forget about all the logistics that you had to do on the way. You forget about the tire that went flat on the way over. You forget about the person who forgot their cord to plug into this thing, or forgot a power strip, or the American forgot that the voltage is different in Europe, things like that. You know? I think it does even out, though a lot of the high may be very, very, very concentrated in one section of it, for sure.
I was talking with a band called Indian Cane that's also come playing. They have also been around for some years, yeah. And one of them said that for him, music was a bit like, now you're talking about being polyamorous. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that music for him was a kind of like sex, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what ends up taking the place in that relationship. I think that's a really good analogy. I'll see if my wife agrees. But yeah.
Yeah, but what I said to him, and I can say it to you, maybe you can't use the same excuse that he did. What I said to him was that now when he was coming home, he would probably, when the whole band came home, because they were talking in that time, yeah, they would probably find the divorce papers. Yeah. But then he said, yeah, but they're going to send it in an e-box, and I can't find out after they change it to my MIDI day. I can't find out of it, so I won't read it.
Yeah. You'll never get it. You'll never find it. You'll never get it. It'll be there for you somewhere, but yeah, you just know what's happened. Yeah. So.
But it takes a lot of your time, and it takes a lot of hardness to get it to grow and to...
Yeah, it does.
To pay out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is difficult. The whole, exactly, the logistics and all that behind it. But again, I mean, that's how it is being in a band all the time.
But I mean, it's a lot of bother at one time. Mm-hmm. But then again, another time, you're talking about giving something to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you want to have a lot of bother just to give something to people.
yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we...
It sounds a bit masochistic, doesn't it?
It is if you're not getting anything back, for sure. But I mean, there's also a time and place for that, right? Yeah. But I think for me, it feels like I'm paying back the musical debt of the people who did that before me, you know? So if it's just my turn to get in line in the great machine. I think it's interesting that you point out how much time goes into it, though, because it's not something that I feel like we spend a lot of time talking about. You know, you still got to file. You know, you still got to do the version of filing your taxes, or literally filing your taxes, depending on how much merch you sold, right? Mm. And it's, you know, nowadays the way that we consume it, it's so fast. You know, it's almost free, if not free, and everywhere.
Yeah.
And what it, 3 minutes that it takes for you to listen to. Yeah. Was hours and hours of
hard
probably
work.
Most likely more than one person's life that they put into that.
Yeah,
and it all compresses down there. I guess I don't really know how to feel about that, but
yeah,
I just think it's interesting to address that because I don't think it gets brought up very often.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean I don't know, but it's like when people, a lot of people when they're having jobs or to do something in the garden or at the house or in the flat or whatever, they're very often complaining, yeah?
Yeah.
The feeling of going to rehearsal or going out on a gig. And
And that's why a lot of bands break up also, I think, because it's so, when you have a full-time job and you also have garden work to do, it's so time-consuming and energy, it takes a lot of energy to do all that.
Yeah.
So if you also have a band, which is kind of like running a company as it is, which is also really time consuming, it depends on how much you really want to be in a band, period. You really need to want it to do it if you want to get anywhere with it, I feel like. But that's like the inner fire in the stomach, always wanting to keep pushing on. It's not for everybody, I think. which, again, it is why a lot of bands break up for that particular reason.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to address that.
But what I find more or less I wouldn't say, how can I say, what I find really interesting and maybe a bit of mind-blowing is that people want to use that much time, go through that much bother, just to give people something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's not always just for other people, it's just as much for us performing. We get a lot of kick out of it. It's the best high you can get, being on a stage, especially with the kind of energy we play with on stage. I mean, just wait till you see him on stage. I mean, he doesn't just sing, he performs, dancing around, stuff like that.
Careful, do it on all seated.
All seated next time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just infectious. We're also just so lucky to have our drummer Daniel is a powder keg. Mm. He's in that kind of energy. I think you, at least for me, I can't help but move around with. It's kind of good somewhere. But I mean, I'm just sort of, it's not really me. I'm just there for it, I guess. I don't know. Like, I don't really know. You know, I'll sort of look back and like, oh, I guess I did that. But I'm not the, you sort of enter, at least I, if I'm doing it right, it'll be more of a trance or flow state thing. And then I'll sort of come back afterwards and be like, oh, you're bleeding from there. That's,
yeah.
Should maybe patch that up. But, you know, it's just part of it. So.
But after all you said, I can't help wondering, and it's a question I ask sometimes in these podcasts, if you were sitting if you were alone on an island, would you still play music?
Yeah.
Because you have been talking a lot, giving it to people and that kind of thing,
Yeah.
But, so if there isn't nobody to give it to, why then?
It is interesting. I mean, Vincent van Gogh, the painter, he painted for himself primarily. He didn't sell any paintings basically ever in his lifetime. Mm. And he's considered one of the greatest painters ever. Using him as an example, it was in his nature. He couldn't help it. It was for himself, also mentally. It was his only way of getting his emotion out. So if we were on an island right now and I had a guitar around or something, I mean, that would probably, it would probably be the only way to make sense of anything, for me at least.
I'd love to hear that album.
Yeah, you'll get it.
I know what you're doing next summer.
Yeah.
I've noticed that even if I'm doing something else, if I'm doing some sort of a task in some sort of a job where I get a bit stressed, I will realize that I'm singing. I'm sort of singing, I think, to calm myself down in a sort of a reflexive, self-soothing way, which, if there are other people around, can be... I think probably can be a little bit irritating. It's just soft enough that you're not sure if it's a fly going around the room or if it's actually on or something. The halfway bit's tricky. But I've noticed that that's definitely, if I'm just trying to process something, even if no one's there, you can still, you know, you can give it to somebody, you can give it to the audience, but you can give it back to yourself too. Yeah. I don't think that's cheating. It's a different experience. It's a different experience. I think if you're going to cook for people coming over, or if you're going to make dinner for yourself when you're tired on a Tuesday night, maybe they're the same meal. I don't know. But for me, I would put a little more effort into if I know I have guests coming over, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a give and receive kind of thing. Definitely.
Yeah. Great. The last question I have for you is that when you are playing at the festival, what do you hope to feel, to think, to get out of it, to however you can say it, either when you're on stage or when you're going to stage or when you're going off stage or when you're driving home or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Of course. Mm. Hopefully they'll leave the place and go, holy shit, that's a kick-ass rock band.
That's about it. It'd be nice.
Yeah.
I think I'm hoping. I mean, I guess as the singer, I feel like a lot of what I have to do is translate what we're doing, because the vast majority of these songs that people will be hearing for the first time and very loud, and I think it's just mentally hard for our brains to track something that we're experiencing for the first time. You're too busy experiencing it. So I guess I'm hoping to be able to translate the message of the songs and the message of the band to the audience successfully without overwhelming them with noise or things like that. Especially because it's not necessarily the it's not all sunshine and roses with RZEP. Maybe roses, but besides that, I'm really curious to hear the other bands. I'm really curious to see what the what's going on. I mean, I'm still so new in this country that I know some of what the pulse is and a little bit of what's going on, but you know, I'm also looking for, you know, whatever's going to sort of get me that next musical fix. And yeah, I'm excited to hear that.
Great. Looking forward to hear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and seeing you in Tulsa.
Yeah.
It was nice you could put out the time to talk with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming all the way over here. Yeah. I really appreciate that. And thank you for bearing with me. And letting me do it in my native language and not anyone else's.